evening, everyone. Thank you so much, Rabbi Willig. One of the reasons I love coming to Camp Ask is because every year I come, my resume gets more embellished, and I get greater positions. And that's not my good side. Neither is that, but whatever. Maybe you want to go from the top. It's really a privilege and a pleasure. I look up to all of you for what you do this summer, what you're about to do this summer, and I, of course, I don't know where you went, but Rabbi Willig is a tremendous role model, I'm sure, for all of you here in the camp. There he is, and he's certainly a tremendous role model for me in terms of learning, in terms of midos, in terms of leadership, and a lot about what we're going to talk about tonight. Usually I have the opportunity to come to Camp Ask more towards the end of the summer, in the middle of the summer. I understand we're just getting started here. Is that the story? So we'll try to orient our message tonight as something that will help us build our momentum and build our energy to take on the summer in a really spectacular fashion. I want to share with you a Mishnah from Pirkei Avos that I always found very peculiar. The Mishnah says the following. Shimon bino Omin. Shimon, his son, says. You know that the first parak of Pirkei Avos are the Zugos. It is a pair of Jewish leaders, the Nasi and the Av Bezdin, each one explicating a different mantra that captures the ideal and the value that their life defined. And the Mishnayos of Pirkei Avos essentially transverse Jewish history. So towards the end of Perek Aleph, we are introduced to an individual, to a Tana named Shimon. This Tana is the son of Rabban Gamliel. Rav Shimon ben Gamliel is his name. Shimon Gamliel's grandfather is Hillel himself, Hillel and Shammai. So Shimon bino Omer, it's one of the last Mishnayos in the first Perek. Shimon, the son of Rabban Gamliel, Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, says the following. Kol yoma, my entire life, gadalti bein achachomim, I grew up amongst rabbis. Nebuch, right? V'lo matzasi l'guf tov, and after spending my childhood and my adolescence and my young adulthood immersed in the world of rabbis, it is my assessment that the greatest thing that one could possibly do for themselves. So what are we expecting? We're expecting Torah. We're expecting chesed. We're expecting tefillah. V'lo matzasi l'guf tov. Growing up amongst rabbis, the greatest thing that I found these rabbis to personify for the body, lo matzasi l'guf tov, science. Now, I don't know what kind of dysfunctional rabbinic home this man was growing up in, but the last group of people that you ever would imagine would promote the ideal of science is rabbis. Rabbis love to talk, right? I was once going to Eretz Yisrael on a Motzei Shabbos. And that Shabbos in my shul, it was a very, I don't remember, there was something going on in Eretz Yisrael, and it was very dramatic, and I gave a very, very long drasha. And sometimes I get a little bit out of control, and it goes on and on and on. It was very long. It was very good. But it was very long. So what happens? I happen to be traveling Motzei Shabbos to Eretz Yisrael. I get to Newark Airport. You know Newark Airport? It's a very beautiful, inspiring airport on an olfactory level. And I walk up to the line, the Ella line, where you're introduced to Israeli benevolence. And I wait on the line to be interviewed by the woman whose name is always either Nofit or Osnat or whatever, some Israeli name. And she starts asking me questions. And they love to ask you these questions. So standing behind me, two people behind me, is a man named John Stefanski. He was in shul that Shabbos. He's a friend of mine. He happened to be visiting from Eretz Yisrael. We're standing in line at the El Al security counter. And the woman looks at me and she says the following. Where are you coming from? I'm coming from Passaic, New Jersey. Writes many more letters than Passaic, New Jersey. Then she says to me, "And where do you pray? Where do you daven?" I said to her, "I daven at the Young Israel of Passaic." So she says to me, "Aha. The Mihalav, the Young Israel with Passaic." So I said to her, "Nani Arab." So she says to me, "You're not the Rav." Said, "Why don't you think I'm the Rav?" She said, "You look too young. You're too young to be a Rav. Rav, yes, the Rav, yes, I can get up. Get up now. And the program a little string in the back, you know? And then it goes down to the guru, "You're the Rav." So I said to her, "No, I'm the Rav, I'm the Rav." And we're arguing back and forth. John Stefanski from Two People Behind says, "Lady, let me tell you something. I was in his synagogue this Shabbat. The man spoke for 40 minutes. Believe me, he's the Rav." And she looks at me and she goes, "Arba'im dakot." I'm like, "It's about your messed up country that I'm talking for 40 minutes. That was wrong to speak. That's what you learned from rabbis? That you should close your mouth?" And the Mishnah goes on. The Mishnah goes on to make a second statement. "V'lo ha-medrash hua ikar, ela ha-mas." And not only that, but the most important thing in life is not to contemplate, is not to introspect, is not to formulate and articulate, is not to give eloquent drushos. Lo ha-medrash hua ikar, ela ha-mas. The most important thing in life is to do something. That's what you learned from rabbis, to do something? Rabbis love to darsh. One of the things we do at the CJF, one of the things I actually do at the CJF, other than the list that Rabbi Willie talked about, is we train rabbis who are already in the field, and we run Yarchei Kalas. We bring 40 rabbis from all over North America for 3 days together to learn, to study, to prepare drashos, to meet about issues, and on Tuesday night, we always take them out to dinner. If you want to live, you got to watch 40 pulpit rabbis order dinner. You should see what goes on. It takes an hour and a half. I'm going to tell you three things I want for dinner. The first is going to be an appetizer. The second will be a main, and the third will be dessert. After I'm done, I will review the three things. And now we'll drill down. The appetizer is going to on and on. Lo amidrash ha'ikar ela ha'masa. That's what you learned from growing up in the rabbinic world. And then the Mishnah makes one more statement. V'chol hamar b'dvarim. Not loud enough? Or you want me to sing? You don't want me to sing. V'chol ha-marbe dvarim, and anybody who talks too much, anybody who's marbe b'dvarim, v'chol ha-marbe b'dvarim, chotei, will end up sinning, will end up committing sins. And the question on this Mishnah is, what does this Mishnah mean? What do you mean that there's such an inherent value to being quiet? We believe in koach ha-dibur. We believe in the value of expressing yourself, of tefillah, of learning, of talking, of communicating. The world was created with ma'amaros, with words. All of a sudden, the king value here is shtika, is silence. Where does this come from? What is this talking about? And this is the question on this Mishnah. So the Rambam begins to explain the Mishnah, that there are different types of speech. Some speech is encouraged, it's a mitzvah, it's on the Torah. Some speech is usur, like Lashon Hara. Some speech is neutral, like general talking. It shouldn't be done so much. And the Rambam begins to read and understand the Mishnah as a referendum on our obligation to be conscious and deliberate about our speech. Not to just talk. What did I learn from the Chachamim? That there are moments for shtika. That one should not always be talking. One should be conscious. someone saying, the capacity of those words to create and to destroy, to bring forth new ideas, to innovate, to ultimately bring the world to a different place, but there's still moments of shira. So I want to discuss tonight a little bit of a different perspective. What is this mishkan? So who is Rav Shimon ben Gamliel? Rav Shimon ben Gamliel is the Nasi of the Jewish people at a very, very critical time in Jewish history. He is the Nasi of the Jewish people at the moments of Churban HaBayis. This coming Sunday, we're going to commemorate Shivat HaBayis. These events did not occur in a vacuum. These events occurred on a landscape of political and religious and sectarian conflict. And Rav Shimon ben Gamliel was the Nasi of the Jewish people. He was the political and national head of Am Yisrael through one of the most traumatic experiences imaginable. Through the moments leading up to Churban HaBayis, Churban HaBayis itself, and the aftermath. Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. But like we said in the beginning, every single Nasi had a corresponding Abbez. Who was the Abbez when Rav Shimon ben Gamliel was the Nasi? The Abbez was somebody named Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai. And one would expect that if you were to have these two roles, one is the Nasi and one is the Abbez, that the Nasi's personality would be the charismatic figure. Outgoing figure. The Nasi's personality would be the one that could stand up and rally the people around the cause, that could uplift them, that could inspire them. And the Abbezdin, who's the Abbezdin? The Abbezdin is the Zaken Gadol from Elal. He sits, he studies, he paskins, he learns, he's in the newspaper, whatever, the Abbezdin. But yet we find that these personalities were completely inverted. Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, we are told, was a confrontational Jewish leader. An outgoing, charismatic, take-control individual. When ultimately the zealous Yerushalayim began to push Am Yisrael to the brink of this of extermination by burning down all the storehouses of food, he escapes from Yerushalayim in this clandestine plan. He approaches the general who is literally standing outside the walls of Yerushalayim, prepared to destroy the city and raise the Mikdash to the ground. He faces him and he confronts him. And he says to him, you're going to be the emperor. And he gets Vespasian, gets frustrated with him. Who told you to talk to me that way? Finally, he's validated and Vespasian gives him three choices, three wishes. And Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, in these three wishes, omits a very obvious request of saving the Mikdash itself. He saves Yahweh, he saves the Chachamim. Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai is the leader that is out there. He's the one that holds the press conference. He's the one that says to the Jewish people, this is the direction we're going to go. Take me Yahweh the Chachamim. We're going to save the city of Yahweh. We're going to reestablish the communities of Torah in perpetuity. And Rav Shimon ben Gamliel is an individual that we barely hear from at all. Where does Rav Shimon ben Gamliel arise in the world of the Mishnayos when karbanos for women who had children became too expensive? Rav Shimon ben Gamliel enacted certain legislation that ensured that the prices would go down. Rav Shimon ben Gamliel led the nation not come on top of the table, rallying the troops, not by creating the energy and charisma. Rav Shimon ben Gamliel led the nation from the quiet, cautious, pensive, deliberate, personal type of approach to leadership. And the truth is, there are two modalities when it comes to leadership. And everyone in this room, by definition, in your role here this summer, and through the process of elimination by your affiliation with an institution that itself is so known to instill the values of leadership and how many people we know go on
sorts of opportunities and positions of leadership. Everyone in this room enters the realm of what it means to be a leader. And there are two modalities of leadership. When we think about leadership, we often think about the upfront, charismatic personality. The person who can hold the room. The person who can stand on the table and make such a fool of themselves that they command everyone's attention. Or the person whose ability to express themselves with eloquence and power transcends any other distractions in the room, and they have everyone there with them. And these are the individuals, these are the personalities we relate to as leaders. But there's another modality of leadership as well. And I want to share with you, there is a book. The name of the book is called Quiet. It was written by a woman named Susan Cain. And the book Quiet says the following, listen closely, that there are two different personality types in this room. There are extroverts, people who love hacking with people. I got four cell phones and nine accounts and they're tweeting and they're Facebooking and they're Facebooking and they're Twitter and they don't even know where they are. They just can't stop. People who are totally extroverted, they're constantly communicating, they're constantly exuding personality and energy. And then you have the introverts. People who are a little quieter. People who are a little more themselves. People who feel more comfortable when their role is more clearly defined. So in the Harvard Business School, when you walk in on the first day, what happens is they give the team in the new class the following goal. They tell the team, you have to imagine that you have landed on a desert island. You only have 10 things that you could rescue from this plane in order to allow you to live. And you have to rank these 20 items that are on the plane in order of importance of what you would need. And this is what they make you do. And it's an exercise to develop teamwork. So you sit in a group and you say, okay, what do we need for the plane? Right? So you would, iPad, definitely, right? What do we need for the plane? We need that there's an axe on the plane, there's a knife on the plane, there's food on the plane, and you start to rank them. So what Susan Cain found, listen very closely, what Susan Cain found is that when you look at the team, you look at the group of people who are rating these items, you notice the following. The louder, more extroverted, more charismatic personalities, their private list, they have to make their own list, and the team's list match. But when they have the expert survivalist who knows exactly which things should be picked, and they look at their list, that doesn't always match the team's list and the extrovert's list. That will often match the more quiet person's list. Why is that so? Because in our society, if you're quieter, if you're more reserved, if you don't exude that exterior energy, if you don't have that Sonia's type of booming personality and presence, we don't internalize what you're saying the same way. We need every speaker to be amazing and entertaining and fabulous and unbelievable. And if someone has something to say, it might be much more insightful and much more valuable and much more creative. But if it doesn't come across with the same degree of eloquence and passion, it gets overlooked. Because we tend to gravitate towards the world of the Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Says Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. There are two modalities to leadership. There are the loud and in-your-face and charismatic exterior leaders, and there are those who are a little bit more internal. There are the quiet giants who are able to comport themselves with a degree of dignity and a degree of focus that allows them to make a serious difference in the world, but in a very different way. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, in his Perusha Pirkei Avos, uses this distinction to explain the difference between Moshe and Aaron. Moshe Rabbeinu was the dominating leadership personality with the Jewish people. He was the one who comes down from Har Sinai and says to the Jewish people, what are you doing? Shalom, says the Mishnah in Amos, is Oy Shalom, Rotei Shalom, Oy Besaprios Mekabel Torah. The Amos Rabbi Nosson says, what did Aaron used to do? Aaron used to walk up to people one on one, not in a big Shabbat home, not in a big event, not with a concert, not with an amazing speech, one on one, in the most intimate fashion, and just greet. Says the Avastar Nasan, Vinasan Lo Shalom, the Ikdim Lo Shalom. He's just greet them. He's just saying, how are you? I want to get to know you. I want to understand you. I want to talk at you. I want to talk with you. I want to connect with you. I want there to be a depth to this relationship that is not rooted exclusively in my ability to capture your attention, but is rooted in our ability to connect with each other on an existential level to really have a meaningful interaction. And the Medrash tells us that when people used to have this experience with Aaron HaKohen, that later in life, when they would find themselves confronted with the challenge of falling short of expectations of Torah, they would say to themselves, Oyemi, how can I do these things? Shenosan Aaron Lishon, I have developed and cultivated a relationship with Aaron. Aaron believes in me. Aaron knows me. Aaron is connected to me. There is a modality of leadership, of connection that is rooted in the small and intimate and incremental moments and things that we do to connect and influence and impact others. Rav Yaakov writes that there are two models of influence. One is called a mechanech. Mechanech means you're building someone. You're transforming someone. A child walks into your classroom, you're the mechanic. It's your job in the next 10 months to build this child, to ultimately instill within them the values and ideals of Torah, the skills of learning, the magic of what it means to be a Jew, the pride, the enthusiasm, the elation of connecting to God. But there's also another type of influence, and that's called the mashpia. Rav Yaakov writes, the word mashpia comes from the word shipua. You know what the word shipua? It means to slant, like a roof, to be slanted. Because when water falls on a slanted roof, except my roof where it goes through the roof, but when water falls on most slanted roofs, what does it do? It rolls straight off onto whatever's below. Hashpa does not refer to the directed and conscious and intentional movement of trying to change and move people. Hashpa refers to the radiating values of beauty, to the example you set by simply being who you are, to the aim, the tov, the good, el hashik, to the ability to walk into an environment and make a difference, not just based on your ability to command somebody's attention, but because of what you represent, because of what you embody, because of who you are, because of the values that you bring forth. That is the mashpia. And all of us have moments where we're called upon to be a mechanic, or we're called upon to build. And those are the exciting moments, because there's an activity, and there's a directive, and there's a moment, and there's a crescendo, and it builds, and it's exciting, and you get to bring all of your creativity and individuality into it, and you feel so good about it, and you're commanding the whole. And those are great moments. But there are also moments of hashpa. Not every moment of impact and influence has to be intentional and directed and planned and programmed. So many moments of inspiration and influence that are very transformative occur through silence, occur through someone standing for something great, occur for someone who did the right thing at the right moment, in the right way, and it made an impact, it made a difference, it instilled something, it modeled something greater for the people around them. And that is ultimately what Rav Shimon ben Gamliel was getting at. That yes, There are rabbis, there are influencers, there are counselors, there are teachers, there are role models that befit the Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai paradigm. There are people out there who can get up in front of a crowd and grab everyone at the moment. Recognize the power that exists in between those moments, in the moments of silence, in the moments of proximity, in the moments of just sharing an experience together. Not everything you give to everyone has to be so concrete and so directed. Sometimes it's just about being you. And when we embrace the sunlight, like the one you have before you, it's very scary because you think to yourself, how am I going to keep up the endurance to be able to work this hard every single day, every single hour? How am I going to keep up the energy? How am I going to allow the singing, the dancing, the enthusiasm, the dining room, all of the activities? How am I going to do that? We have to realize it's a marathon. It's not a race. And that, yes, those moments have their place. There are moments that are called for that need noise. But there's so much to be accomplished in the silence as well, in the shikra as well. And sometimes the impact that we make in those moments is just as influential and just as meaningful. And so, yes, there are people that trend towards one personality or the other, but ultimately, we're all a combination of both. And this is what our goal is when we work with any group of people. And the magic and the heroism of what you do for the sangha is to be able to summon from within yourself an inexhaustible energy, but recognize that there's so much that you bring to the table just simply based on who you are and how you live your life and what people see as a reality. There's an amazing story that's told. If you have the opportunity to ever go to, I'm sure you have, you've been to the Kotel, I'm sure many of you have been to Israel. So if you go to the Kotel, I don't know if he's still there, but he definitely was. There's a man that stands at the Kotel, you know, the plaza of the Kotel, and he cleans the stones of the Kotel. That's what he does. He mops the floor. And as he mops back and forth, he sings. And if you go really close to him, his name is Binyan, you'll hear what he's singing. And the song that he's singing resonates with the time period we're in now. He sings the song, Yibane Beis HaMikdash Meira Binyan. That's what he sings. And he sings and he mops and he sings and he mops. And if you go up to him and you say to him, tell me, has this been your life? Is this what you've always done? Like, what? This is who you are? You're a custodian, a maintenance worker at the Kotel? I'll tell you the following. He'll tell you that he had a law career, that he was a high-powered attorney in Tel Aviv for decades. And this is what he's doing with his retirement. Why is he doing this with his retirement? Because this man, Binyamin, found himself in a concentration camp. And he was asked, and he was not asked, he was tasked with one of the generals of the camp to come to his bunker and to take a toothbrush and to literally clean the floors of this general's bunker. And the general walks in, and he and his friend are cleaning the bunker. And of course, just to simply give themselves pleasure, they began to degrade the Jews, and they kick the Jews, and they arm the Jews. And they continue rushing, they continue cleaning, and finally the general left. And Binyamin turns to his friend, and he says to him, you know what? This is so undignified. This is so horrific. We have to do this. We have no choice. Why don't we also sing? And they start to sing this song. Shibboleth Beis HaMikdash, whatever the tune was. And they start to sing that the temple will be rebuilt. And they're singing and they're getting into it, and it's getting louder and louder, and it's starting to fill the room, and all of a sudden the general hears from outside. and he freezes with fear. And he looks at them and he says, "What are you doing?" And they say to him with trepidation, "We're singing." And he says to them, "What are you singing?" And he says to them, "We're singing about our temple being rebuilt." And he says to them, "Hey, let me take you outside. Come outside with me." And they walk outside and he shows them. He shows them the smoke coming out of the camps. And he says to them, "You see that? That is the only vantage point from which you will ever see your temple ever rebuilt. You will never see redemption. You will never see the light of day. You will never see freedom. This is your future." And he slams the door and walks out. And the youngin says to his friends, he says, "I make a shrew, I make an oath right now, here at this moment on this day. I make an oath that if we ever get out of this town and find our way into the land of Israel, that I am going to scrub not the floor of the jail and the camp, but I'm going to scrub the floors of Yerushalayim. And I'm going to see of our aspirations and our dreams of rebuilding the Mikdash." And lo and behold, Binyamin survives the war. And he comes to Israel and he's penniless. And he has no support and no help. So he finds himself studying, pursues a long career. But the day that he finishes that career, the day that he retires, he remembers his oath. And he begins, he walks towards the municipality office somewhere in Yerushalayim. And he says to them, "I want to clean the streets of Jerusalem." And his greatest revenge was not in killing people, was not in chasing people, was not in hunting down perpetrators. His greatest revenge was to simply clean the stones of Yerushalayim and sing of Yibonei Beis HaMikdash, to simply live as a legacy, as a walking monument to the eternality of the Jewish people. There is so much in life that we can accomplish by trying to quiet down the noise and listening to the music of ourselves. So often we think that our goal is to be loud and dominating. Our goal is to allow our true selves, what really makes us us, to ultimately come through, to ultimately flourish, to ultimately radiate and impact others. And so if there's one message about leadership, we stand now around Churban HaBayis, and we recognize that what the Jewish people needs more than anything for the future of Israel, it's people just like you. It's people who are willing to devote their time and their summer to doing something extraordinary. It's people who are willing to immerse their entire selves, their personalities, and everything about them into the world of Chesed. But let's never forget that it's every living moment that could exude those lessons and those values and those ideals. And when we do that, we are able to inspire, we are able to uplift, and we are able to transform ultimately everyone around us. I wish all of you an incredible summer, a summer of personal growth, a summer of impact, a summer of strength, a summer that you find as enriching for yourselves as you're going to give to others, and a summer where you internalize your experiences and allow them to transform you and affect you, so that when you return to whatever it is you're doing during the year, and whatever trajectory that your life takes you, that you continue to perpetuate those very same ideals, those ideals of keeping, those ideals of standing up, and those ideals of radiating the essence of who you are. Go on, please.
Thank you so much, Rabbi Nasser. An amazing speech. Thank you. Very inspiring. Just a couple of things for this evening. And a couple.